Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. COVID-19 has disrupted life in the U.S. and across international borders. A migrant refugee camp in the Mexican border city of Matamoros braces for what could be a deadly outbreak. More than 1,500 asylum seekers are forced to live at this tent camp as their asylum claims unfold in U.S. immigration court. Texas Public Radio's Reynaldo Leaños Jr. reports.
Along the banks of the Rio Grande, a small group of kids splash in the murky water. They wear shorts with no shirts, and they leap from a makeshift dock into the river. Not far away, their parents stand on a hill that overlooks the water. And behind them stretches a village of hundreds of tents they call home. Fernando is from Honduras and has lived in the camp for almost a year. Like others here, he'll only speak if we don't use his full name. He holds his 10-month-old girl. He playfully asks the baby if she wants to go back home. Fernando says living here hasn't been easy. It was always a life of uncertainty. Now, there's been an unexpected twist. The coronavirus might reach the camp, and he feels they're invisible in the eyes of the Mexican government.
No, nosotros no somos prioridad aquí.
We're not a priority here. We're in their way. That's how they see us. Imagine, if we get the virus, we don't have security.
He says COVID-19 has put his family in a tough spot.
We're thinking about sending our kids to the U.S. It's hard to be separated from your children, but I feel like they'll be safer from the virus in the U.S. than here living in tents and these conditions.
Because his kids are minors, ages 16 years old, 9 years, and 10 months, U.S. policy will admit them to the country if they are unaccompanied by an adult, which means they will have to cross alone.
Aquí estamos. Vamos a intentarlo esta noche.
We're going to try this tonight to see if the kids can cross. If not, we're going to try to cross them through the river.
While some families think of a way out of the camps, others do their best to make the tents safe and healthy. Down the path from Fernando's tent is Yamali. She's from Honduras and has 3 kids. She says she doesn't want anyone to lose their life and hopes no one dies because of the virus. There are now signs posted with cartoon sketches on how to properly wash hands. Another sign reads, Inventa un nuevo saludo, which means invent a new greeting. But the bigger impact, it comes from U.S. volunteers. If they stop coming, Yamali says it could cause chaos because they depend on their help. Some of these nonprofits will limit their crossings into Matamoros due to the fear of spreading the virus to migrants or contracting it themselves. But Global Response Management, or GRM, will continue.
We as an organization are good at disasters. We try to think about the worst case scenario and plan for that and then hope for the best.
Daniel Taylor, a GRM remote paramedic, says following U.S. safety guidelines is almost impossible in a tented camp.
Things like social distancing is very difficult here, simply because the living conditions, some people are in 10-foot by 10-foot tents, and there may be 4 or 5 people in that.
A measure they have made is adding more hand washing stations. They're also pursuing coronavirus testing kits, if only they can cut through the red tape.
So our organization actually has access to rapid tests that we could have imported into Mexico. We need the Mexican government to approve that. So far, that has not happened.
That's Helen Perry. She's GRM's director and a trained army nurse from the Ebola crisis.
We're even offering to give 500 kits to the local hospital for them to be able to test. We desperately need them.
While the testing kits are tied up by the Mexican government, one migrant has decided it's time for his family to leave the camp. Fernando has made up his mind. His 16 and 9-year-old kids will cross the border alone.
It's going to be hard. My heart is going to break into several pieces. It's very hard.
At nightfall, he and his wife hug their children tightly. Everyone is in tears. The kids walk across the international bridge to turn themselves into U.S. border agents, all in hopes of being safer there than here at the camp. I'm Reynaldo Leaños Jr. in Matamoros.
U.S. immigration courts remain open during the coronavirus pandemic. Judges and attorneys tried to put pressure on the Department of Justice. Some hearings were postponed for migrants who've already been released into the U.S. Other hearings are still moving forward for detained migrants and asylum seekers forced to wait in Mexico. KERA's Mallory Falk has more.
So I'm at the bridge watching to see if I think that there's anyone who's about to cross.
Taylor Levy stands near an international bridge that connects Juarez and El Paso. She's an immigration attorney, and she's been here since 4 in the morning.
Standing in Mexico right by where you pay your 5 pesos to be able to enter to present for your court hearing, and I pretty much just like look around and try and look for people who look like they might be going to court.
She spots a father and daughter. The little girl wears a puffy black coat and shoes topped with giant bows, the color of rainbow sherbet. Her father carries papers in a plastic bag, a signal to Levy that he's probably on his way to an immigration hearing. She races over to give advice.
Basically, we're just letting people know that we think that some of the judges might no-show because of the virus.
Levy has reason to think judges might not show. They've joined government prosecutors and immigration lawyers in a call for an emergency shutdown of all immigration courts. These groups are usually on opposite sides, but they agree on this. Keeping courts open puts everyone's health at risk.
Thank you. Please stand by.
Representatives from the groups held a press call Tuesday.
COVID-19 does not discriminate. We are all in it together.
Ashley Tabador is president of the Immigration Judges Union. She said there's been no transparency from the government.
There's no engagement. There's no discussion with any stakeholder.
She's learned about court closures and postponements through late-night tweets.
We don't understand their logic.
On the same call, Fanny Behar Ostro, head of the union representing ICE attorneys, said migrants are being forced to choose.
Between attending court on the one hand or protecting themselves against exposure to the coronavirus by not attending court.
And risking deportation. Since the call, the government has issued some guidelines, like allowing judges to limit the number of people inside the courtroom at a time. But it stopped short of fully closing the courts. And this came after some hearings had already been packed earlier in the week. I'm standing here on San Antonio Avenue in downtown El Paso, outside the federal building where immigration court takes place. The court is still open. On Monday, about 30 asylum seekers showed up in government vans. They were escorted into court wearing face masks. The courtroom was so crowded, reporters weren't allowed inside, but I was able to talk to someone later who saw the proceedings up close.
None of the people in there had masks on.
Imelda Maynard is an attorney with Catholic Charities. She says people sat close together on benches. There was no way to follow the government's own guidelines for social distancing.
There really isn't room in that courtroom for the people appearing to sit 6 feet apart from one another. It's a pretty small courtroom.
Maynard says there's no good option for asylum seekers waiting in Mexico. Close the courts and they're stuck there even longer. Keep the courts open, and they risk catching and spreading the virus.
Feels like it's a total catch-22 because on the one hand, you don't want to prolong their suffering, but at the same time, you don't want them to get sick.
One proposal, telephonic hearings. But that won't work for everybody. Maynard says not all asylum seekers in Mexico have access to phones or mailing addresses.
This program is just such a cluster. There's just no good solution.
The federal government did not respond to a request for additional details on the new guidelines or the decision to keep some courts open. At the International Bridge, attorney Taylor Levy continues to give advice. She'd like to see asylum seekers released into the U.S. so they can isolate in safer conditions with relatives.
The way that our government is choosing to treat people in such vulnerable situations in the midst of a global pandemic is still utterly shocking.
For now, she provides whatever guidance she can. I'm Mallory Falk on the U.S.-Mexico border.
Coming up, Latino communities affectionately greet and say goodbye to family and strangers alike with hugs. Not the best behavior during a pandemic.
It's something that we're going to have to work on, something that we're going to continually have to remind our community, our friends, our families.
That's coming up on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The senior population is the most vulnerable to COVID-19. A group of volunteers in the Texas Rio Grande Valley are reaching out to assist the older population in keeping the coronavirus at bay. Lon Gonzalez has more.
In the Rio Grande Valley, a group led by two nurse practitioners are helping the elderly population there deal with coronavirus by helping them as they stay away from large gatherings. John Yanis and his partner April Lopez started Project COVID Care as a way to assist many of the valley's elderly in dealing with day-to-day situations.
The elderly population is so vulnerable to this virus because, they're of their age, and a lot of them don't want to leave the home. In fact, some of them we saw yesterday are self-quarantined. They don't want to go out because they don't want to be around crowds. So if they call us and they need their medication picked up at the pharmacy, we'll go pick it up for them and deliver it to them. Or if they have a list of groceries they want us to go buy for them, we'll go pick up the list and so on and so forth and go and get the groceries for them. So it's basically, stuff that they need done, but they don't want to leave the house.
That's John Yanis, who heads up Project COVID Care. The program has garnered some attention throughout the valley. In one case, Yanis says he's even received calls from one non-Rio Grande Valley community to bring his group of volunteers there. Speaking of volunteers, Yanis says he gets calls from people wanting to give their time to help.
Oh, every single day I get calls that people want to volunteer, so I take down their name and the area they live at so they can, around their area, whether it's a city in the valley. And I take down their phone numbers and the hours that they can help me. That way, and I put them in a spreadsheet that while I know who can help at a certain time, all I got to do is go to it and pick someone to call this member or the patient that called or the person that called. And, they give them a call and they'll go and do the errand that they need.
Project COVID Care, based in McAllen, will continue to assist the elderly who don't want to leave their homes during the coronavirus pandemic. In South Texas, I'm Lon Gonzalez.
Schools across Texas have canceled classes during the coronavirus pandemic. Students are home. Parents struggle not only with keeping them entertained, but educated and fed. A large number of children in West San Antonio rely on free and reduced-price school meals. Texas Public Radio's Camille Phillips met two San Antonio families at Lanier High School, where they picked up sack lunches for their kids.
At Lanier High School on San Antonio's west side, cars full of families pull into a circular driveway. A school official asks how many children are in each car.
Can I ask them how many have with you? Just one? All right.
Cafeteria workers grab milk out of an ice-packed portable cooler and add them to sack lunches for each child.
Thank you.
Most families drive through in cars and SUVs, a great way to keep people apart and limit the spread of COVID-19. But Leticia Tapia comes to the school lunch pickup on foot with three grandkids in tow.
Ariana. Aiden.
My name is Jordan Gomez. I'm 11 years old and I go to Days of Allah Elementary.
She says the meal pickup is a blessing for her family because having her grandkids home all day is an extra burden on their pocketbook.
It is really, really hard, to have them. They're constantly eating and eating and eating. So it's hard.
With school canceled, Tapia is watching her grandkids while her daughter is at work. She says they're running her a bit ragged.
Going crazy. Playing chair is going crazy. Yeah, but I was telling my daughter that she's got to do something, like study or something, because they can't be without the education. They need their education.
She may soon have some help keeping the kids busy. San Antonio ISD plans to distribute work packets and remote learning material. But Ariana, Aiden, and Jordan may be spending their days with their grandma for weeks to come, depending on how the virus spreads this week. And that's not the only uncertainty weighing on families.
We're both about to get laid off real bad, and hours are cut and everything.
Father of three, Junior Galvan, is worried the travel restrictions and event cancellations will leave him and his wife without jobs. Galvan drove to Lanier with a red truck full of his three kids and two nephews. He leaves the truck idling and steps out to speak with me.
They were supposed to be in school, and this was like unplanned. So basically we have unplanned 2 meals. That's 20 meals that we didn't plan for. So, I mean, this helps out a lot.
He and his wife work at a hotel downtown. He's a maintenance engineer, and she does room cleaning inspections. They think they're about to get laid off because San Antonio isn't getting many visitors.
By the end of the week, I heard that they're just going to close down hotels. And they were giving us, like, one day off, and then this week, 3 days off, you know, extra. And that's like, now we have zero money, you know?
Galvan says he hopes to find side jobs if he gets laid off. He used to work in construction. But for now, he gets back in his truck and back to a job he may not have in a week or two. I'm Camille Phillips in San Antonio.
Medical experts say staying 6 feet away from each other is key to stopping the spread of COVID-19. But social distancing can be a challenge, especially on the Texas-Mexico border and in large Latino communities. Cultural norms include greetings that go well beyond a handshake. Angela Kachurga reports from member station KTEP in El Paso.
In South El Paso, 7 members of the Trejo family get ready to part ways near an international bridge. Some will stay on the El Paso side of the border. Others will head back to Juarez, Mexico, after enjoying a visit. 15-year-old Ruby Lerma Trejo tells us who's there.
You have your mom, is that your...
Yeah, my mom, my grandma, and my tia, and my little cousins and my 2 sisters.
They've been conscientious about hand washing and using hand sanitizer. But when it comes time to say goodbye, there's hugging. 65-year-old grandmother Blanca Trejo said in the middle of an embrace, she thought, oh no, we should have done the little elbow bump. That's something the family planned but forgot to do. On the border, people greet each other not only with a handshake, but also a hug, abrazo, and some kiss on the cheek, which is customary in Mexico and other parts of Latin America.
If we're really going to reduce the risk of this epidemic from spreading in our community, we're going to have to learn how not to do that.
Olga Chica Alozzi, an infectious disease specialist in El Paso and chief medical officer at Delso Medical Center, acknowledges changing cultural norms is not easy.
It's something that we're going to have to work on. It's something that we're going to continually have to remind our community, our friends, our families, our children. I have 2 children.
Limiting gatherings to the recommended 10 or fewer people will also be hard for border residents with large extended families and ties that bind on both sides of the border.
Tenemos nuestras precauciones, pero tampoco a entrar en pánico y así, ¿verdad? O sea, todo normal.
Juarez resident Lucia Cardoza said her family is taking precautions, but not panicking. She was visiting El Paso with her 76-year-old father.
Lavarse las manos. Nada de beso, dicen que nada de beso.
Silvestre Cardoza said, we have to continue living life as it is. His advice, wash your hands and no kissing. Plenty of older residents did not heed the other advice from health authorities to avoid public places.
Oh.
Miguel Hernandez scoffed at that idea. The retired maintenance worker who lives in Juarez said he was relying on his faith to protect him. He offered a handshake, insisting he will not do an elbow bump. Hernandez says he gets that cough every winter. He did not cover the cough either. Earlier in the day, he lined up with other pedestrians waiting to cross the border into the U.S. Americans arriving from Europe have complained they were stuck in lines at crowded airports before going through U.S. customs. That's common during peak hours at busy border crossings every day. El Paso father Kevin Alemán was headed across the border to Juarez with his 3-year-old daughter, who was munching on M&Ms, to visit the girl's mother, something they do up to 3 times a week.
I carry a hand sanitizer in her backpack all the time, just in case of anything.
He's not concerned about COVID-19, but others, like 87-year-old Leonardo Alvarado, are worried about what he calls a dangerous virus. He's a singer-songwriter and goes by the name Gavilán Norteño.
Artista internacional. Te califico como Lucha Villa y Lola Beltrán.
Alvarado belted out one of his songs near the International Bridge in El Paso before heading home to Juarez. He said he's considering composing a corrido or folk song about COVID-19. In El Paso, I'm Angela Conchierga.
Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Brie Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Ben Henry is our podcast producer, and Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
Lávense bien las manos, en serio ya ni la friega. Hay que tomar precauciones.